You could eat the highest quality food, but if you don't absorb it, it's a waste of your money and time.
Welcome to the world of muscle smoke and mirrors, where it's all about muscle, health, history, training, nutrition, bodybuilding, and state of mind.
Hey, listener, you're back with episode 35 of the World of Muscle with Randy and Tomash. Hey, Randy.
Morning, Tomash. Can't imagine we've done 35 episodes.
It's crazy. It's actually been a year. I think it was released about some middle of May. I think the first episode was released. We recorded a few of them beforehand, just so we wouldn't feel pressured to do more. But now we're in the routine of doing them once a week.
Yeah.
And, that's how we had the lost episode of Dave Draper. We recorded it very early on.
I totally forgot about that one. And the audio of that one was not great for me. You could hardly hear me, but I liked the show a lot because it was about Dave.
Yeah, I think you were sitting far and you didn't have your headset on and whatever. But we fixed all those. Okay, today's episode. Let's get back to that. Today's episode, since we've talked about so much about food and supplements and stuff, but we haven't talked about the foundation, which is digestion, probably the least sexy topic for a bodybuilder or any fitness enthusiast. But without it, we'd pretty much be, and some people have actually, well, not some people, there's a school of thought that calls your gut your second brain, and some people even say first, because it's independent of your brain, actually. It does all kinds of things on its own. But going back to digestion, let me get back to what digestion is, and this is common knowledge, but I'll just reiterate it anyway, that your digestion starts in your mouth, then it goes down your pharynx and esophagus, down into your stomach, then it goes into your small intestine, then your large intestine, then into the rectum, and then into the anal canal, and the last stop is the toilet bowl for most of us. Yeah, I mean, people don't like to talk about poop, but your poop...
Everybody's favorite topic, yeah. No, but it's very indicative of the health of individuals, what comes out the other end. And digestion is, it's not so totally fully understood because there are more areas breaking loose in this research, especially with the bacteria. But with digestion, we talked about this in another episode, about whether some people believe we're really supposed to be vegans, others say no, we're carnivores, but we're not true either one, because we can eat either one. In most cases, some people are a bit more adapted to one over the other. But, you know, in the mouth, like, we're different from a carnivore. A carnivore has 10 times the acidity in its hydrochloric acid as we do. And we have an alkaline start in the mouth. We have amylase or betalain ignonus, so starches begin digestion in our mouth. I don't think that is the case with a dog. Then in the stomach, it's more hydrochloric acid, it's in pepsigen. That's where most of the proteins are digested before it moves on to the first section of the ileum, the first 10, was it 12 inches in the small intestine, where the vast majority of digestion takes place. The gallbladder is important here in digestion too, because fats need to be emulsified, because the fats are what we call hydrophobic. They don't like water, and it's a watery medium in which the enzymes are located. So most people aren't even aware what their gallbladder actually does or what bile is. They know they throw it up once in a while, and that green stuff, they know what it is, but in order for the body to digest fat's very hydrophobic. That means it doesn't like to be mixed with water. That's why it's settled. Oil floats on water, cream floats on top of milk. But the enzymes, the lipases to digest the fat, are in a watery medium in the body. So bile will emulsify the fat and bring it and disperse it into the watery medium to be digested as it goes into that duodenum area. It's in the duodenum where the pancreas secretes the proteolytic enzymes to do a lot of more digestion on the proteins. Carbohydrates will be broken down and fats will be broken down to be absorbed along the, I think it's called the jejunum of the next part of the small intestine.
You're getting pretty detailed in there.
Yeah, no, so they can take it or leave it. Yeah, and then because the last part of the small intestine is the ileum. I still remember this from when I was reading anatomy 30 years ago. Do you know when you're younger, the stuff sticks in your head? If I was to read it yesterday, it'd be gone, right? But I mean,
but it's totally different when you learn it on your own and when you learn it in school. Because when you learn it in school, you don't really care to remember.
Yeah, so a lot of this stuff, I remember having to do talks and projects when I went back to school, and I could no longer see to read the book in front of me, so I had to do it by memory anyways.
Tough job, but that keeps it in.
Digestion is so important because people don't pay attention to, they're wondering why, you know, they don't feel good the next day, they're on the toilet, and they don't even clue in it as to what they're eating.
No, they don't put two and two together. You know, the funny thing is, Lily asked me about, how do you know someone's digestion is good? I'm like, you know, you talk about the things most people don't want to, their poop.
Yeah, and how they feel after they eat, in turn.
And that's exactly it. And most people are not aware of how they feel, regardless of eating or not eating. We just turn that part of us off.
We're finding out, too, the large intestine is taking a beating. The digestion continues down the line. Even in the large, the bowel and the descending.
That's where most of the water gets reabsorbed.
Not just reabsorbed, but a lot of minerals are reabsorbed, and there is a lot of E. coli bacterial activity creating amino acids and for certain vitamin K, and some, depending on the health of the individual, and reabsorb, many feel feeding the brain coming from the bowel. So again, we're learning more that it's not just enzymes, hydrochloric acid, yes, it helps break down big chunks of the protein, or the proteolytic enzymes from the pancreas. It's bacterial activity in our whole ecosystem that of our intestinal tract that breaks down.
Yeah, we couldn't live without them, as you said in the beginning. We can't. I mean, they're the ones that do all the work.
It's for the digestion. It's like Joe Weider told Ken Leisner, like when found out how they make amino acids to bacteria, we are literally eating their shit. And that's basically, often we're fed by bacterial shit, and they digest and break it down, and that's what we consume. So this is an area that's opening up more, especially with bacterial activity, that they have to admit it's there, but they didn't want to because they like killing it with antibiotics, right?
Yes, and once you do, it takes you forever to rebuild it up.
Yeah, for many, many decades in the medical field, bacteria was our enemy, and, you know, we had to take all these antibiotics, but we're realizing now we have a total symbiotic relationship with this bacteria, and we can't live without it. Genetically, we're 90% bacteria. So.
I know. That's, when I first heard that, I heard it a different way. I heard that the human body has 100 trillion cells, and 10 trillion of them are human cells. I was like, okay, so what's the rest? And it's even the mitochondria is a bacterium.
Yeah, they put it now as from a genetic perspective. The genome has like 30,000, 300,000 in terms of genes, where our bacteria has like 3 million. So it's like 10%. It's a huge difference, and we're primarily bacteria if you look at us from a genetic perspective. But everybody's digestion is different. Their physiologies are different, and the health of people's physiologies vary. And food combining can be very important, because in our culture, when you look at, let's say, the works of Weston Price, when he traveled the world and studied those primitive tribes dispersed all around the world, they had staple foods. They didn't have the smorgasbord of tropical foods, you know, indigenous foods mixed with all these imported foods around the world, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. They had what was indigenous to them and seasonal.
And seasonal.
Very important seasonal.
Yes.
And their digestion had basically adapted to that type of input. But now everybody eats everything, and they're eating 5, 6, 7 different foods at one time, and wondering why Tums are at the top of the list in selling antacids. And
well, that's what, you know what the number one seller of over-the-counter drug is?
Probably X-Lax.
Yeah, that's exactly
it.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know about X-Lax specifically, but it is
people are doing enemas, colonics, and then to clear their intestinal tract. It's a very delicate operation down there. And I've, with clients...
Bernard Jensen was big into cleaning out your bowels for that reason, just to help your digestion.
Oh, a lot of people are...
he was back in, what, 60s? 50s, 60s? I forget when Bernard Jensen was.
Oh, yeah, but it'll go back further than that.
Absolutely. I mean, it goes back to Ayurvedic times in there.
With many clients, I was going to say, when they have digestive issues, it's easy to correct a lot of them just by simplifying it. For example, even though I do raw milk, and a lot of people do the milk, but then when they put milk on top of a 3 or 4 course meal, it really complicates the issue, because milk's the whole food in itself. And often they like it ice cold, where they're eating a warm meal where the stomach likes about 100 degrees to operate, and you're chugging down an ice cold whole food, and it's going to disrupt the digestive process. So
yeah, it'll have to warm it up first, and that takes time, and then things just sit there in the meantime waiting.
For me, I simplify my digestion. I call it performance eating for me because I like to consume and not feel that I did anything. Mm-hmm. I don't want to, when I do sit back and put the feed bag on, it's usually with cooked carbohydrate stuff, I'm done. You know, I'm done. I usually make sure that like Saturday night I'm just got, okay, what am I going to listen to on TV or what's Patty going to make me or whatever. But it's just like, no, that's nothing to do with performance whatsoever.
No.
So, but most people eat like that all the time.
Well, that's how you know, right? You eat until you can't eat anymore, and then you're done.
Yeah, you have a number of your tips. I think in the little book you're working on, I think you have a number of tips that the people can read about digestion.
Oh, yeah, there is. I mean, that is one of the most important things. So I do go into little details about certain parts of digestion and even what you can do before you even eat to prepare to digest your food properly.
Yeah, like relaxing.
Relax, exactly, and don't eat when you're angry and all those.
Yeah. It's funny that it's not like the bodybuilders, Trailor, it was a Viking, Adolf Northquist, back in the turn of the century, was saying, look, if you're upset and tight, it's not a good time to eat. You know, it's not a good time to eat.
Yeah, if you're going to fight with your spouse, girlfriend, boyfriend, significant other, don't eat. it'll actually turn into poison in your stomach, someone said. I forget who it was.
Yeah, remember in Volume 2, I wrote about William Beaumont. He was a military physician at Fort Mackinac in Lake Huron. In the early 1800s, when he came across an 18-year-old Canadian kid, Alexis St. Martin, who got half his stomach blown away.
Yes.
And when it didn't fully heal, left the opening an aperture that Beaumont could have his own little private laboratory watching how digestion worked. Because at that time, they're still thinking it was primarily mechanical, mm-hmm. the stomach churning and churning. That you can see, no, there's some type of fluid base in there. And he was tying pieces of food, dropping them down the aisle, because he could see the food pass from the esophagus right down into the stomach, splash. And he was monitoring digestion and learning many things at that time. I found that quite interesting. Even though his procedures upset the poor kid, because it was an intrusion on his, you know, the stomach's an enclosed environment, but you have this opening, so it wasn't a really accurate environment to do with the stuff he was doing, but it was still interesting.
It would probably be hard to ignore someone watching your stomach.
Richard Tucker, who was the raw food eater guy I mentioned in Volume 2, he's the one who was reading about Beaumont back when he was 18 years old as well in high school. Like Richard was reading about Weston Price way back in the 60s when most people were totally oblivious to his work and stuff. So, but back to with the digestion, it's...
Back to the whole digestion part of it and how you mentioned it affects, well, it's a second brain, and it actually affects your mood, it affects your line of thinking. And you mentioned a friend of yours eats once a day because he wants to stay focused. And when he eats, he feels, I mean, pretty much what you said about performance eating, it affects your brain as well.
Now, there's a number of people that do. I know a couple of people. That was the head of a significant corporation that I worked for, where he was involved with litigation. He's an expert witness in court cases. And he found he needed to have an empty stomach to be clear of mind. So he'd once a day. I was interviewing him a little bit because I read, you know, Ori Hofmeckler in The Warrior Diet promotes the eating between 4 and 8 o'clock. But I had another elderly gentleman who was 79. He only ate his one meal at lunchtime. He said that's just how he feels. He needs it early in the day for better digestion, and he's good to go for the rest of the day.
Serge Nubre was big on eating once.
He ate a lot of food. He ate it up to, I don't think you can eat 9 pounds of meat in one sitting. So he might have done it for a period of time.
Well, unless he starts in the morning and finishes 9 hours later.
Yeah. That's a good point. But yeah, Serge ate a lot of food at times. He may have practiced that for a while, but when he was eating all that, you know, trying to build a size, I think he was eating more than once a day. I know that Pete Grimkowski was eating through a window of 6 hours starting at 4. He would eat and most of his calories that when he was training in the 70s, but he ate a lot. And again, for those people out there if you're relying on Rolaids and Tums, you're really not doing yourself a favor because you're just...
Yeah, something's off.
Yeah, and you're suppressing the acid, and your stomach still needs that acid to digest. You might want to simplify your diet, just eat proteins. Like, I'll just eat meat often by itself. I know milk and eggs mix with me good, but meat and eggs mix well with meat. Milk and eggs do not. They sit heavy, and they don't fit.
Milk and meat, you mean?
No, milk and eggs do not sit well. It's a heavy digest for me, where other people are okay, but eggs, raw eggs with meat is fine for me. Also,
okay, so I may have misheard. I thought you said milk and eggs sit well with you, and then you said milk and eggs don't sit well with you.
I did. I screwed up. It's okay. Like, I mean, it's milk and eggs do not. Eggs and meat do. And it's just called food combining. The natural hygienists, the vegans, they, Harvey Diamond in the 80s was really promoting this food combining. Don't mix starches with proteins. Don't mix fruits with either one. Eat fruits by themselves. But Bob Hoffman was talking about food combining back in the late 30s when he wrote his book, Better Nutrition. He used to say it was more an individual thing, and I think he's correct.
Mm-hmm. It is.
He said what foods that he can't combine as well. And you just have to be really observant about what you're eating and how it sits with you. You know, if you don't feel good, think what you just ate previously and maybe even as far back as the day before.
Yes. And that's the other thing I wanted to bring up with that is, how they with food combining, different foods get absorbed and digested in different parts of your body. So, as Bob Hoffman said, Bob Hoffman, you can eat things together, but it is individual. Some people can handle
Absolutely.
It, and some people
yeah.
can't. It just doesn't. So your carbohydrates just sit in your stomach until it gets into a more alkaline environment.
Environment of the small
exactly.
intestine.
Exactly. So.
Yeah. You'll know your stomach will bloat.
Yes.
Like with for me, I just said all of a sudden, man, I am bloated and I don't feel good. And usually it's gonna. I'm not sick. I just don't feel optimal. And the next day, I'm gonna be
yeah.
on the toilet.
And that's where awareness comes in. Like you got to know your own body. You got to pay attention instead of just
yeah.
reach for the Tums or the Pepto-Bismol or whatever it is people reach for, which kills the acid, mm-hmm. which actually blocks your body from absorbing the nutrients because it isn't really. You could eat the highest quality food, but if you don't absorb it, it's a waste of your money and time.
Yeah, look what's going on today. We have gluten-free diets. Number one, the gluten is supposed to be up 25% with the new wheat stocks that we have compared to 50 years ago, but we have irritable bowel syndrome. We have mm-hmm. celiac. We have enteritis, diverticulitis, colitis, Crohn's. These are all basically variations of degenerative bowel disease, which means our bowel's getting beat up. And it's getting beat up. Why? Because we're eating garbage. Right?
And we can't handle it. It can't absorb whatever it needs out of it. So you become malnourished. And that's another big thing is people eat all this quantity of food, yet are malnourished. You know, like scurvy's coming back with children because they don't eat. They're
calorically overfed, nutritionally starved.
Nice. Exactly.
Nutritively. Nutritionally. Yeah,
nutritively. And the other point I wanted to mention with antibiotics, as you said, I see this time and time again with clients and friends. The minute they get on antibiotics is when they start getting sick all the time. I'm just like, yeah, you're sick once. You get to sit this one out, eat properly, increase your probiotic intake because that'll help you. And the ones that can't wait the extra day or maybe 2 days that it feels bad and they get on antibiotics, every month they're going to get sick afterwards. It's like clockwork.
One of the theories of why that's happening is because it's a different theory of what bacteria does and viruses and molds and funguses. That bacteria is believed to actually consume not just digestive food, but it'll consume all tissues, even toxic tissues. And the resulting excretion of the bacteria is what creates the side effects. So we take antibiotics. So it's like shooting a fireman going to the fire, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's the smoke that's irritating people. So they shoot the fireman, the smoke settles down, but the fire never does go out. And it'll blaze up again. So when you kill the bacteria, yeah, you stop the consumption of that toxic tissue, but the tissue is still there, and the body will again try to consume and get rid of it and a month later. So sometimes it's tough to let your body go through a sickness or a flu or a bad cold, but don't suppress it. Don't suppress a cough. Don't suppress a fever. The body has fever for a reason. Even stopping bacterial activity on its own by raising its own temperature to kill that bacteria, but we try to artificially or prematurely lower that fever out of fear, and we stop the process so it can start up again. That's one of the theories. I'm not dogmatic about that. It's just one of the other theories that's interesting.
What's the number? I believe that if you go up each degree, your temperature goes up. That doubles the effectiveness or the strength of your immune system.
Yeah, it's also believed that the body is raising temperature control using fever to control bacterial activity, which mm-hmm. is going on in sickness. The bacteria is doing a job, but the body's using fever to control it so it doesn't get out of control. If it gets out of control, it raises the temperature to stop it, to slow it down, or even bring it to an end.
Yeah, heat destroys.
Yep.
I think that covers what wanted to talk about today. And
we'll do another one.
Exactly. Listener, if you have any question about any of this stuff that we didn't cover, then please let us know. We might do a part two or three, because we could talk about this for days.
the whole topic about number two.
And we have yet to cover raw versus cooked. That's going to be a big topic in itself. That's why we haven't done it yet. And there's a lot of different practices. Thanks, Randy. Do you have any news and updates?
I'm going to go on Superhuman Radio next Wednesday, which is what, June 2nd or something like that, to talk about the American Muscle Monopoly.
June 1st is next Wednesday.
American Muscle Monopoly with Kyle Lenore. And I would try to see if Lee Thompson will come on, but he's such a busy guy. I don't know, but we'll see.
Yeah, he's got a few lawsuits going on at the time.
I have my hammer strength revision coming in this weekend. I think it's actually going to work, so it's going to be pretty cool. And I got another project in my mind working on my geezer rack. So.
The geezer rack. I know. I saw it not long ago.
You'll like it. You and Lily, that one might... I just ordered another bar. If I were in Canada or anything from the States, just a big easy bar is $300.
Wow.
Bringing up here in Canada.
That's crazy. That's the actual shipping cost?
Bar and shipping. Entire.
Okay. All right.
Thank you for listening to the World of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. We hope you've enjoyed the content of this episode, and we're looking forward to sharing more next time.